In the summer of 2023, Maine Public partnered with StoryCorps in a Military Voices initiative to capture the stories of Maine veterans who served in the armed forces. During the recording sessions, veterans shared details about their tours of duty and how their time in the military affected both their lives and those of their loved ones. This limited podcast series is dedicated to these Maine veterans and their families. We want to thank them for sharing moments of their lives with us. I'm Keith Shortall. Let's get started. Episode 5, Honor and Art. Angela Blevins never dreamed that her life's path would lead to a 27-year career in the U.S. military, or that she would be promoted into an unusual specialty in the Navy that relied more on art supplies than weapons. Angie's journey began in a small town in Nebraska after a couple of years of art school.
And I got done with art school, and my father said, "Now what are you going to do? You got to get a job." So I tried to get a job knocking on doors and whatnot, and he says, "Why don't you join the military?" And 6 months later, when I did join the military, he said, "What'd you do that for?" Needless to say, I joined in the summer, and I didn't ship out until December.
I just want to go back to that your father suggested it, and it was it ever on your radar before your father suggested it?
No. Joining the military seemed to be a faraway place, and it wasn't on my radar, so to speak, but it was a life-changing event to join. Well, I wasn't ready for boot camp, people. Well, maybe I was ready. My folks were very rigid, and the military was pretty rigid. We were marching at 4 o'clock in the morning after getting off a bus at 2. And everything was immediate and had to be done and dressed right dress. And that was boot camp. And then my tour service started in Beeville, Texas. It was a small base in the middle of nowhere, just like hometown Shelby. But individually, it was a new environment because I was attached to an air base. So we had A-4s and T-2s, and they were test planes, and they learned how to fly there. Those lieutenants or whatever, those Airedales learned to fly on my base. And then they would go from there to the Lexington in Florida and learn how to land on a boat or, you know, an aircraft carrier. I was a non-rate, which meant I had to strike for a job, which meant I didn't have a job title when I got there. I learned about airplanes at boot camp. It was a two-week course after boot camp, so and I'm not sure how that helped me or didn't, because I ended up selling hot dogs.
Your job was to sell hot dogs?
Right. One of my jobs was selling hot dogs. Another one was just, they called it first lieutenant, which was being a boatswain's mate in the Navy, which is a janitor. And I did that for like maybe a year. And then they let me strike for something, which, so I had a choice, a book, a career book. And I had choices of illustrator, which is illustrator draftsman. I could strike for that. Or I could strike for my other curiosity was to become a structural mechanic on an airplane. And so they let me go through the steps to become one of those. So I did the illustrator draftsman because that's what my degree was in. And nobody on the base had experience. So what I did was I painted murals on the base. And then they let me take the test for illustrator draftsman about a year later. I was promoted to E4. I was one of 125 people in the United States Navy to become an illustrator draftsman at E4. I think there were like 300 of us in the whole Navy.
You went into one of your loves, which was art.
Right.
And you were able to do it in the service. And what did you actually do? What did you, besides murals on the base?
From that base, then I got transferred to Virginia Beach, where I worked at Navy or Marine Corps Intelligence Training Center. And I did slides way back when they had to paint designs on plastic and take a photograph of it and have it show on a wall way back before computers.
Okay.
And so that's what I did at that base.
And how did you enjoy your time where you were in Virginia Beach doing some graphic work and helping them make slides and I'm not sure what else. How did you enjoy it? And did you enjoy it?
Well, I had to have a top secret clearance, so everything was classified information and making slides.
And you had been, just for clarification, when you were in the Navy, you were in for how long?
4 years, 11 months, and 27 days. As a good military person would say.
Yes, I guess so.
But I can't say the same thing about the Army.
So you chose to join the Maine National Guard.
Right.
National Guard.
Reagan was president, and he was trying to encourage people that were serving active duty not to go back in. So I decided to join the Maine Army National Guard because it wasn't, quote-unquote, active duty.
Uh-huh. What was that like?
I forgot to mention, I was in the Army Reserves for a year, but that was boring. The good news was I didn't have to go to Army boot camp, but the bad news was you're going to work in a building for every drill week and organizing books. And I thought, well, this is not fun. So I joined the Guard because it offered something else to do. Oh, I know. I was an illustrator draftsman in the 286 when I joined the Guard
Division.
In 1988. Mm-hmm. And that was the unit that went to Desert Storm in 1990.
And so...
I went to Desert Storm in 1990. We got called up on Veterans Day, and I was painting a sign for the recruiting office. That day I got home, and I had received a call that said we were activated. We were going to Desert Storm.
Did you have any idea that that was possible, that you'd be sent to Desert Storm?
If you wear the uniform, you're prepared, because, I said, at boot camp, you think 24/7 about your job in the service, and you don't think so much about your civilian life. So the Guard was the same way eventually. I mean, with that, they trained us to go to war.
Mm-hmm.
So we were called up on Veterans Day, and by Thanksgiving, we were in Fort Devens, Massachusetts, and there were only 69 of us that served. And we landed in Spain, I think, and then we landed in the desert. And it was dusty, and you couldn't see anything, and it was hot. And they gave us 3 bottles of water, the big liters, and said, drink this.
And so what do you remember how long were you there at Desert Storm?
From December to May.
December to May.
5-6 months.
Okay. And how would you evaluate that, looking back? I would remember that time as what?
As dusty. I remember it as not knowing what was going to happen day to day, even though some people will say they had it all figured out. I would say that my role as an E4, I had no idea what was going to happen day to day. And our meals were MREs some days, meals ready to eat, and some days we had chili con carne for a month.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing what they could do with that. And then you'd eat outside and you'd just get sand in your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Or there'd be windy days where so windy that the tent would blow away. Or
what was the role of your, do you call it a division?
What was
that?
Our job was transportation.
So,
but my role was, as an illustrator draftsman, was to do flip charts or illustration charts for the meetings. And write everything out on the points. And remember those days?
Oh, yeah.
And some of them I'd make fancy with whoever was the general or whatever that they were looking for, and what was going to happen that day. Or
you got out of the military what year?
2010.
With how many years of service?
27.
Right. And how old were you when you retired?
48.
48 years old. And you did some special things since you left, but could you talk a little bit first about your time with the Honor Guard in Maine?
So after Desert Storm, I joined the Honor Guard because they remember the fallen, and some people forget that. I think it reflected back on me being the youngest in my family and going to funerals all my life, that now I have, at that time I served in the Honor Guard, we went to cemeteries and we did funerals and we did the 21-gun salute, and everything was dressed right. It wasn't sloppy. It was nice and neat and organized, just like the service is supposed to be.
So can we move to another aspect of your service, which was when you worked on creating portraits for fallen heroes? And was this something you thought of doing? Did you undertake this as something?
So guards across the United States were being activated to go overseas for Afghanistan. I would go to other states and see what their memorials were like as you're leaving. And a lot of people had photographs, and the photographs were turning yellow even for a short period of time. And So I introduced that they should have portraits drawn by somebody, me.
Hand-drawn portraits.
Hand-drawn portraits. So I did that. I did the portraits of the fallen soldier.
Can you talk about that? What did it do for you when you were doing those?
It was honorable. I guess the twist of fate is that I was in the honor guard still, and we were doing their funerals. But it was honorable to do the portraits because I could identify with them.
And how many portraits did
Nine.
You... Nine. And was that a particularly meaningful endeavor for you?
It was. Yeah. Very heartfelt.
And when you did those portraits, what would it be like? You'd be looking at pictures.
So I would take the photograph that they present me and draw a picture of them. And they were all 11 by 17. Each one had their own story, and I'm hoping that the portrait tells that story.
And have you ever been thanked by family members or by anybody in the military?
I haven't been thanked by the military yet.
For doing this?
For doing this.
And yet?
Yet they have the photographs on the wall, and there's a plaque next to it that I created to let folks know that I did the portraits.
So.
And they honor them.
They
love them. They took them out of Camp Keys and put them on a wall, and then they made a wall for them at Camp Chamberlain. It's
the new facility. That's
it's beautiful. A brand new facility, and they all are amazed, but nobody can say thank you.
What do you make of that?
I think it's sad.
Yeah, it is. Do you think if you had been a man doing that, they would have given you?
They probably would have given me the Medal of Honor.
You think they might have, like...
I'm not sure what they would have done.
Given you extra stripes or at least something.
It's an honorable job, and I did it. And I did it because I'm honored to do it.
Right. Thank you, just as a citizen of Maine, for doing that, because I know people do love those portraits. I know you were interviewed by Bill Nimitz for the Portland Press Herald, and that was a beautiful story. And I felt grateful that you were acknowledged for that, by that piece. You know.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a really giving thing. You are one of the most generous giving people I've ever seen in my life, or known in my life. I just want to say that. And this is just an example of it.
Thank you.
Master Sergeant Angela Blevins honored fallen soldiers through her meticulous portraits, and served her country in Desert Storm and the Maine Honor Guard. And she continues to serve others through her art and her spirit. Next time, we'll meet Staff Sergeant Timothy Allen Drake, known to his brothers and sisters in arms as Sarge. Sarge served 25 years in multiple branches of the military. He saw deployments in the Persian Gulf War, Iraq, and Afghanistan, as well as tours of duty in other locations around the world. Sarge will discuss the deep, lifelong bonds that are forged between fellow service members. Military Voices of Maine is brought to you by a partnership with Maine Public and StoryCorps, as well as the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This podcast series was made possible through the generous support of Lee Auto Malls, Wreaths Across America, and FedCap Maine. The series was produced by Allison New and Keith Shortall. That's me. You can listen to this podcast and others like it on our website, mainepublic.org, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.